And welcome back to the diner, friends. I'm James Lilex, and I'm sitting here, as usual, at the long boomerang pattern formica counter at my beloved diner out on old Highway 23. So many things to bring to you today, but if you're hungry, I recommend the hash. The hash has been going down well today. People have been saying good things about the hash. It's an old diner recipe. We start with the finest pastrami that's been put into sandwiches that we've served to people in previous days. But if they leave some of that sandwich behind, you know, the crust with a little pastrami in it, we set that aside and put it in a bucket. And then we also add to that the fries that people leave behind. And that's odd, because usually people don't leave behind French fries. If you've ever worked at a restaurant, you notice that they'll leave the grapes. They'll surely leave the parsley. But they generally manage to work their way through 100% of the French fries. But for whatever reason here at the diner, people always leave a couple of wedges of spuds behind. So we take those aside and put those in the bucket. You let it sit for a day. And then you run that mash through those cross-cut paper shredders that they sell at Target for about 25 bucks or so. You have to put it on the highest setting because the shredders will generally balk at the crusts, especially after a couple of days. But when you're done, you've got quality hash. Anyway, I've been doing some behind-the-scenes technical work here at the diner. It never occurred to me before that I have these two wonderful pieces of technology. I've got the Cray mainframe down in the basement, and I have the diner radio right here, which of course is just capable of getting broadcasts and songs from any era, any time, any place. Well, it never occurred to me that I might be able to patch the two together, tie them, and create a voice interface where I would ask the computer to find a song based on some absurd criteria I gave it, and then it would interface. Is that the word the kids use these days? With the diner radio and find the song that I wanted. I'm ready to give it a shot. Let's see. All right, well, the radio is working fine. Let's try the computer.
Holy crow, she's riding rough. Let me see if I can adjust her.
Ah, that's much, much better. All right, computer, find me a 1950s Calypso song about Christine Jorgensen, the first famous sex change person. Let's make this tricky. You find me a Calypso song about Christine Jorgensen, sung by Louis Farrakhan.
Recording, inquiry, working.
I am trying to find a solution about a certain person. Trying to find a solution about a certain person. With this modern surgery, they change him from he to she. But behind that lipstick rouge and paint, I got to know if she is or is she ain't. Wonder what gave him the idea and the spark to leave the country, bound for Denmark. He tried to live the life of a man, but that was not in accord with nature's plan. So he underwent this operation and came back home to shock the nation. But behind that lipstick, rouge and paint, I got to know who she is or if she ain't. When she came back to this country, they made her a popular celebrity. Out of public sentiment, she got movie contract and plenty engagement. People came out of curiosity to see this amazing freak of the century. But behind that lipstick, rouge and paint, I still wonder if she is or if she ain't. That lady walk across the stage, they call her the wonder of this modern age. Now she making plenty money, because of hormones and plastic surgery. Drawing down 20,000 a week, and not one listening to this record could get a peek. So behind that lipstick, rouge and paint, what you think she is? Boy, I know she ain't.
Wow, it works. I don't think I'll ever be able to top that search request. That was Louis Farrakhan, incidentally. Before he was the minister head of the Nation of Islam, he was Calypso Louis. A not entirely successful Calypso singer put out several albums, and that was from one of them, Is She Is or Is She Ain't. Well, let's clear our palate with a commercial from one of our sponsors. And who is our sponsor this week? Ah! It's these guys.
They got fine Revere ware pots and pans. They got Johnson's wax and Universal fans. They got TV sets by RCA. They got all the best brands made today. Stop and shop at Kmart. Get the best in name brand merchandise. They guarantee the quality and discount the price.
What we have an example of here is an ad called a donut. It's a radio term that means something that's hollow in the center, like this. In other words, it has a musical bed over which an announcer can come in and discuss this week's specials at Kmart. He's got one eye on the clock. He's got one eye on the copy. And he's got to be careful to get out on time because you wouldn't want to step on those vocals, right?
Stop and shop at Kmart. You can charge it there.
That's very nice.
They guarantee the quality and discount the price. They got Spalding golf clubs, GE grills. They got DuPont products, Stanley drills. They got Bissell sweepers to keep rugs clean. They got Hazel Bishop and Maybelline. They got fine Revere ware pots and pans. They got Johnson's wax.
They got itchy boxers and cans of corn. They got cheap PCs for downloading porn. They got... Oh, sorry. And now we bring back to the diner. Suspense! No, I'm not going to do that whole thing again. But I did find, while listening to an episode of Suspense, the most amazing radio blooper I think I've ever heard. I'm not a big fan of bloopers. It doesn't seem that amusing to catch them making a mistake. But this one is something else. The star of the show is Peter Lorre. I love Peter Lorre. It's odd how a man of his temperament and intelligence was, just sort of cast as a madman. In the Warner Brothers cartoons, he shows up as a mad scientist, even though he's most famously known as a child murderer and M, and of course the sniveling little character in Casablanca. But he became equated with mad scientist roles, or just crazy, crazy man who can't stand it anymore. You gotta love him, because he rode that thing as long as he possibly could. This is a show called, Back for Christmas. Sorry, I bumped the mic there. And Back for Christmas concerns a henpecked botanist, you know the type, who, he's under the thumb of a domineering wife who plots and plans every single little aspect of their life until he can't stand it anymore! And he kills her. Well, before he kills her, he runs into a hot, smoking, sexy botanist at the library, or rather the bookstore, and she takes quite a fancy to him. It's sort of hard to believe because, well, it's Peter Lorre, and we all know what Peter Lorre looks like, and it's hard to believe that this hot, smoking, sexy botanist has got a thing for Peter Lorre, but it's radio, it's 30 minutes, we'll cut him some slack. So, here's the deal. They're going to America, Peter Lorre and his wife. The old wife makes arrangements with the hotel, a demanding series of arrangements about what the room must look like and how many bathrooms it must have and what the window must be, et cetera, et cetera. Well, then Peter Lorre kills this wife because he can't stand... All right. He kills that wife, and then he goes to New York with the new honey. Now, the new honey may be a hot-smoking botanist, but she's also a little naive, and she doesn't realize that the wife didn't just die years ago. She was freshly killed. So, in other words, when they show up at this hotel, and the manager of the hotel starts talking about the letter he got from a demanding lady, well, the new wife is a little confused. She didn't write any letter. What possible explanation could there be? Here, then, is one of the more interesting bloopers from any radio show I've ever heard, from Suspense. And if you're listening to this at work, I advise seriously that you put your headphones on, or at least turn down the volume.
Professor and Mrs. Schumacher, we have reservations, I believe.
Oh, yes, we've been expecting you, sir. Boy, take Professor and Mrs. Schumacher's luggage up to their suite.
You know, Mrs. Schumacher, you're quite a surprise.
Oh?
Your letter reserving the rooms was so thorough. I was expecting an older, more forbidding sort of person, frankly, ma'am.
No. As a matter of fact, we're just married, but my letter reserving the rooms.
Oh, I wrote the letter, my dear, and I signed it Mrs. Hubert Schumacher. Just a joke.
What a cunning old fox you are, Hubert.
I think she meant to say, what a funny old duck you are. And I wonder if everybody knew what she'd just said and just gamely went on trying to keep the smiles from their faces. I've listened to it very closely, and there doesn't seem to be any indication that people are stifling great hilarity, so I don't think anybody heard her. I don't think the network heard her. I don't think anybody paid any attention to it whatsoever, because the possibility that such a thing could have been said on CBS Network Radio was impossible. But there it is. What a cunning old... you are. Indeed.
Now all your shoes can keep a dancing shine
with new shine all of the liquid kind.
And now it's that point in the diner where we take some music that's fallen out of favor for whatever reason, usually a bad one, and present it for your enjoyment, uncritically, without irony, okay? Enjoy. Need to buy some oxen. How much gold do I have here? Ah, shoot. The bazaar's closed. Anyway, sorry. I was just playing a little Dark Tower while you listened to that. That was Bye Bye Blues. You can't not smile, at least a little bit, when you hear that. Of course, a steady diet of that music would drive you insane. But now and again, that chirping, chattering guitar brightens the day. And of course, you know who that is. That's Les Paul and Mary Ford. That's right. When you think of guitars, you think of all the great guitarists from Jimmy Page to Jeff Beck, all rocked your world with a Mary Ford guitar.
When you want a drink to cool your thirst, 7-Up's the one to reach for first. For satisfaction, 7-Up, 7-Up, 7-Up drives first away.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, well, welcome to the diner, Natalie.
Why, hello to you. I would like spaghetti, please.
You want to see if I can get you some spaghetti?
Actually, I would like pizza. Cheese pizza, please.
But we'd only have that yucky cheese pizza that they put in the toasters, and it's not very good. Diners aren't known for good pizza.
How about just spaghetti?
Okay, would you like that with meatballs?
Why, sure.
All right. Would you like it with sauce?
Yes.
Would you like it with Parmesan cheese, even though it smells sort of like stinky feet?
Just plain cheese, please.
All right, I'll rustle you up a batch right now. Have a seat.
Okay, where's the seat?
You can just sit over there by the window. Cute kid. Anyway, I was talking about Dark Tower. This is a game that my friend the Giant Swede used to have.
Where's my spaghetti?
It's coming. It takes a while to make. You know, you've got to boil it. You've got to boil the water and all the rest of it. So, anyway, the Giant...
Where's my spaghetti?
Excuse me, I got to run back to the kitchen.
Got to do everything myself around here. You know, I used to be banned from the kitchen. I used to have a chef. Okay, the pots and see if the water going. I need a match to light this grill up. Okay, here we are. All right, get the flame up, and that should do it, I guess. I'm probably violating some sort of union rule. There, okay, water's on the boil. You know, there's no cook here tonight, so I've got to do everything myself. And that includes, you know, slaughtering the animals for the sausage, and making the sausage, for that matter. So. Just a minute, honey. You've got to boil the water, and you've got to make the sauce. You have to make sauce. It doesn't just arrive, okay? So the Giant Swede had Dark Tower, which in our dateless Saturdays, we would sit downstairs.
Where's my spaghetti? I'm getting very hungry.
You want to come back with me to the kitchen, and let's watch it cook together? I'm sorry, folks. Here, here, let me go back to the jukebox and pop a song in, and we'll be back.
I got home a little late last night, kind of wobbly in the legs. I checked the cuckoo clock on the way to bed to see if there were any eggs.
You can't be fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum. Fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum.
No, you can't be a big shot when your brain's on the bum.
You can't be fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum.
I was standing on the corner, kind of peering through the fuzz, when a guy in a car yelled, "Taxi!" I wondered what it was.
You can't be fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum. Fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum.
No, sir, you can't be a big shot when your brain's on the bum.
You can't be fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum.
You have consumed enough alcohol for 1 week. It is wasteful and pointless. Obey me and live, or disobey and die.
I caught a cold the other night, but I think I know what's wrong. The place I went, there was beer on draft. I sat the draft too long.
You can't be fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum. Fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum.
No, sir, you can't be a big shot when your brain's on the bum.
You can't be fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum.
The water board turned my water off a month ago, they say. But me, I didn't find it out until just yesterday.
You can't be fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum. Fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum.
No, you can't be a big shot when your brain's on the bum.
You can't be fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum.
I spent 10 nights in a bar room. I felt like a millionaire. When I got outside, I said, "What's that smell?" And they told me, "That's fresh air."
You can't be fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum. Fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum.
No, you can't be a big shot when your brain's on the bum.
You can't be fit as a fiddle when you're tight as a drum.
Here you are, ma'am. Here's your spaghetti. Does it look all right?
Oh, you forgot the cheese.
Oh, I'm very sorry. What kind of cheese would you like?
Cheddar cheese would be nice.
Cheddar cheese and spaghetti, but of course. And what would you like to drink?
Juice with ice.
Anything else, my dear, or will that suffice?
A fortune cookie, please.
All right, and a fortune cookie. All right, here you go. Enjoy your meal, and I'm going to get back to work here. You're welcome. Thank you. Anyway, I was talking about Dark Tower. This was a board game that came out in the early 80s or so. And
You know, I don't feel right talking about this without some sort of banal musical accompaniment. Computer, get me some novelty piano instrumental by a Danish pianist who really didn't have any follow-ups and had Fabric in his name. Make that Bent Fabric, like there's anybody Danish named Bent Fabric who had a one-time hit on the piano.
Working.
Oh. Okay. Anyway, in the late 80s, or I'm sorry, the early 80s, there were some times when myself, the giant Swede, Crazy Uke, Wesley the filmmaker, Jet Farhar, there'd be some times, some weekends would come where, by some odd turn of events, none of us would have a date. These were known as most weekends, 52 out of 52, until eventually, you know, one or two or the other would pair off and we wouldn't see them for 3 months or so, but they'd come back, they'd come back. And most of the time on the weekends, we'd go down to the Valley, and on a Friday or Saturday night, that would be different from a Monday or Tuesday night. How exactly? Well, we'd stay until closing time as opposed to leaving at midnight. Smoke cigarettes, drink some coffee, have some beer, play some pinball. But every so often, we felt the need, this is very curious, to go over to somebody's house and spend the evening playing a board game as though this was somehow morally better for us than hanging around the Valley pub. How, I can't possibly see, because instead of being in a large room with a lot of college peers, we were now sitting in somebody's smoky apartment playing a stupid game until 3 o'clock in the morning, with no waitresses. But nevertheless, it was a nice and welcome break. Dark Tower was a game where you moved your little board pieces along, and it was electronically interactive, in as much as when you hit a certain spot or pushed a certain button, it made a sound. And you would have battles. You would battle with dragons and with the Visigoths and the rest of it. Here was the sound that the machine would make when you won. And here's the sound it made when you lost. And so you would fight, for example, and the machine would tote up and it would play three enemy hits in a row and then three enemy loses in a row. And then at the end of it, you tote it up and figure out, well, the ones that ended on a higher note were greater in number than the ones that ended on a lower note. Ergo, I win. Ergo, I collect, you know, theoretical bags of gold and proceed to the bazaar where I can, you know, buy a goat and bugger it off in the cave or whatever. It was that sort of game. It was Dungeons and Dragons with a cheap little sound chip, and that's all it was. We loved it. We played it. Oh, we must have played that game twice, and then we went back to Risk. Risk was a central organizing social point for our circle. It included not just the guys I mentioned before, but odd people were drawn into it. Rick, the DJ, came to the Risk games. Mike, who was one of the janitor slash pool sharks slash hangers-on slash regular devotees of the Valley as well. They'd all coalesce at our house in Dinkytown to play Risk every once in a while. The house itself is, well, I could go on for hours about that place. It was originally built for a university president in the late 1800s, and by the time we got there, it had been chopped up and subdivided into so many little tiny units. Half of us, those of us who lived upstairs were the Valley artsy-fartsy types. The people who lived downstairs were the University of Minnesota hockey team. As you can imagine, the English majors and dancers and videographers and whatnot on the top floor were in constant conflict with the hockey players below. And nothing irritated them most than when we had fun. And so it came to be that one night we were all sitting in the kitchen playing Nuclear Risk. Nuclear Risk was an odd variant that we invented on the game, where every player got a nuclear bomb. And it's odd how that changed the game. Nobody ever wanted to mass armies anymore in Risk because somebody could drop the nuke and they would lose everything. So no one massed armies, nobody dared to invade, and people just sort of wandered around from Kamchatka to Venezuela doing nothing, really. The game was interminable until we finally just blew off all the nukes and then went to the Valley for bacon and eggs at 3 o'clock in the morning. Well, we were having one of those games, and everyone was having a great time upstairs, and then some rocks started coming through the windows. We had the windows open, summertime, but nevertheless, rocks through the windows, pebbles, handfuls. It was the hockey team downstairs coming home from some party, drunk as judges, kings, and lords, and out for trouble. So what did Cooler Head say? Cooler Head said, let them sleep it off downstairs, let them go on and put on their Head East records and drink some more and pass out and choke on their own vomit, like every other weekend. But no, one idiot decides that he's had enough of these guys and he's going to show them what's for. So this idiot gets up from the table and marches down the hallway and down the steps with the intention of arguing with the hockey players and telling them, logically, why what they did was so wrong. And of course, that idiot was me. The giant Swede is loping behind me, grabbing me by the shirt, trying to keep me from going out and getting my head caved in. Yeah, I broke free, didn't succeed. I get outside, and there they are, the hockey players, and they're all stripped to the waist like they've come from an amateur gladiator movie, and they're just beard up and looking for trouble. The first one takes me, grabs me by the shirt, takes my glasses, and flings them into the street, which is this instantaneous emasculating gesture that renders me just moot. And there I am now, depending at the end of one hand with his fist cocked up in the other, and I'm just sort of looking at him saying, "Don't hit me, sir. Please, don't hit me. Rah-rah, sky you ma, go team, please don't." Rick, meanwhile, is in the middle of the street doing these strange bird-like karate poses, attempting to psych out one of the guys. And I think we had a couple of guys who were able to unclip the chain from their belt and their wallet and start swinging that around. We had a couple of guys proficient in rumbling in our social clique, I'm glad to say. Well, what happened was nobody really got hit. Everybody cooled off, and we all went upstairs, and that was the end of that. Moved out of there a little while later, I did. I never played Nuclear Risk again. And when I played those sounds of Dark Tower for the giant Swede, he got all nostalgic for a second and then remembered sitting in that tiny apartment at 718 4th Street, positively 4th Street, mind you, the same street Dylan sang about, smoke-choked, drinking scotch, another dateless Saturday night in the early 80s. And he sort of smiled and realized that those days, which we now call youth, are way behind us. God bless him. Oh, good. My ride's here. I called for a taxi a while ago. I wondered when he'd show up. Hey, Travis. How you doing tonight? Okay, be that much. Are the headaches? Headaches any better? That's my leg, Travis. No. I don't go for that, Travis. Okay. I mean, you're a nice guy. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's not my bag. Okay, dude. Travis. Well, now, don't go away mad. Well, that's just great. My cab driver has left. I irritated him somehow, so now I've got to call for another. And there's only one cab company that comes out this far to the diner this time of the day. I got the number right here. It's Mohawk 55881. Got it. All right, I'm going to give them a call, collect my daughter, wait for them to come. In the meantime, you can just stay right here. And come back whenever you want. Sometimes I'm here, sometimes I'm not. But I appreciate you dropping by today. I appreciate you joining me at the diner. My name is James Lilex, and as ever, I leave you with Studying Brown as we conclude this episode here at the long boomerang patterned Formica counter. Oh, and yes, it's turquoise. Why wouldn't it be?
You bloated idiot! You stupid fathead! You!
You talking to me? You talking to me? You talking to me? Well, then who the hell else are you talking to? You talking to me? Well, I'm the only one here.